This is Mandy.
And this is Stephanie.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths.
All right. So today,
Stephanie, the case that we're going to talk about, which this is episode 29, by the way, you already
almost
know about
30.
This.
I know. Oh, yeah.
You definitely know about this because we've discussed it, and I had to tell you about it because I couldn't wait. So I had to tell you to watch because the case was brought to my attention. New series, new season of Unsolved Mysteries. I know you watched it as well. So I'll tell the story. It was so crazy, I had to dig deeper into the story. It's a true crime case, but first we're going to start the story off with a paranormal, interesting part of this whole true crime story, okay? Mm-hmm. So, a lady named Jody Foster.
Which, that was so bizarre to me.
I know.
I had to go back and rewatch because I thought, I said, did she just make up a name?
Yeah, no. Well, she says it's spelled different. Hers is spelled with an I. I guess Jody, the actress, is spelled with a Y.
Yeah.
Okay. Her and her young daughter move into an apartment in 2000 in Chico, California. All right. Mm-hmm. I think her daughter was 3 when they moved into this apartment. So not long after they moved in, strange things started to happen. Jody said that it was just not a peaceful feeling, like right when she moved in. She just kind of got like an unsettling feeling. And she started having weird, like really weird, bizarre dreams. And we'll go back to the dreams. But she said that her daughter, like when she would take her shoes off, this is how it started slow. She would take her, she had these little pink tennis shoes because they showed a picture of them in Unsolved Mysteries. And she said she always put them by the back door. So they were there when they were leaving and they were there when they got home. They would put them there. And so she said they would always be in the middle of her bed, just sitting there in the middle of the bed. And they didn't understand. She'd ask her daughter, did you move them? And she said, no, she didn't. So her daughter was also talking to somebody in her room. And Jody thought she must have had an imaginary friend. And she called the girl My Liz. So things started getting a little amped up. The little girl had an Ernie doll. Mm-hmm. And it was some kind of, I don't know exactly what the doll did. It was like, it reminds me of those Elmos.
Yeah, I was going to say, it reminded me of a more modern day or our version of the Tickle Me Elmo. But I've never been a fan of talking
dolls.
I mean, after Poltergeist with a clown. And it's just a recipe for disaster.
Well, I've definitely never been a fan of clowns ever since that. All those movies.
I mean, so many.
And my parents, like, bought us clown dolls. And me and Missy would cover them with a sheet. Like, me and my sister would cover them with a blanket before we went to bed. They'd be, like, lined up in our room.
My great aunt gave me a clown lamp. And I made Mom take it out.
Yeah, that's a lot, right?
Because it was
You can't really cover that up as good.
Yeah,
that is a lot. I think clowns were in the late 80s, 90s.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
They shouldn't have been.
No, they really shouldn't have been because that was never...
It's just in poor taste.
Yeah, and I would cover that. We definitely covered those up. So this Ernie, but it did remind me of... I think my kids had the Talking Elmo or something.
Yeah, the Tickle Me.
Tickle, that's what you said the first time. Remember how you couldn't get it one Christmas?
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember having a panic attack at the Auburn Mall. Because it was so crazy at KB Toys.
Okay, that's so funny. No, I know. I remember it was people were selling them for like $100 and stupid stuff. All right, that's how this little Ernie doll that her daughter had, I think it was one of her favorite dolls, it would just go off randomly. If you had to touch it or push it to go off, well, this doll started going off randomly at all hours of the night. So she said she took the batteries out and put it up at the top of the closet. She was like, freak the Ernie doll, right? She said light bulbs would explode, doors would slam, everything was just getting strange and amped up. She said one night, her and her daughter Hannah had gone out to dinner, and when they came back, her daughter's toys were like piled up in the center of the room.
I wish a ghost would come clean my house.
Well, I know, right? Thank you. But this was a little creepy, this part. The Ernie doll was on top of the pile with a noose around its neck.
Yeah, I'm out.
Okay, I think so too, but okay, where did the ghost get the noose? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Was she making her own rope?
Yeah. I mean, I don't...
In the afterlife?
Maybe she found some rope in the kitchen drawer.
Yeah.
And
I have a catch-all drawer, but I don't think I've got any rope.
I've
got fishing string.
Yeah, and I have some rope or twine, so maybe that's what she did. Maybe Jody had a junk drawer and she made a noose. Mm-hmm. That I found a little odd, but... I mean, I believe this sort of, definitely believe something happened in this apartment, but the details seem a little, that seemed a little odd to me, but I'm not calling anybody out. I'm just saying that's strange, right? Mm-hmm. Wondering where she got the noose that was around the Ernie's neck. Mm-hmm. So she was totally freaked out. Of course, she calls the police. I mean, because she thinks somebody broke in. Even if it's not a ghost, somebody's broken into my house, right? There's got to be a logical explanation. Mm-hmm. So the police, of course, they come, they take a report, and nothing's stolen, and they didn't do much about it. They were like, I don't know what happened. It didn't look like the door wasn't broken in, you know.
Yeah, anything. It's just a pile of something toys in the floor with Ernie hanging himself on top.
It's definitely disturbing, but it's not, okay, what are we going to do about it? What are the police mm-hmm. going to do about it? Soon, the activity just became too much. After one night, she woke up, okay? Jody woke up, and the TV turned on, and it was real loud, and that static noise. Then she said the apartment just came alive. The Ernie doll started going off. He has no batteries in him. Mm-hmm. And he started going off. He would say something like, whatever his saying was, he would say it over and over again. He said a couple different things. And one of the ones that he said, he just kept saying it over and over again, the Ernie, that night, that everything just started going crazy. Yeah, like, it had no batteries in it.
Was it?
I feel great. I feel great. Yes. She said all the lights came on by themselves. She said a cord was even swinging from a lamp, like unplugged, like swinging like a jump rope. That seems a little.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Jody went and ran to her neighbor's house, who was also the property manager and that lived like in the apartment next door. And she went and got her, and she had her dog and brought the dog back over. And the dog was going crazy, barking in the apartment. Jody, she had enough. That was too much. And I think she said she had lived there 3 months at this time. So I'm thinking that maybe she let her daughter go stay with the neighbor. I don't know. But she said she stayed outside for the rest of the night, sitting by the pool crying.
Yeah, I hope her daughter was with someone else.
That's what I was. She said a man who saw her crying, he said, yeah, don't feel bad. No one ever stays in apartment 14 very long. Mm-hmm. And he said, not since the girl that went missing. She said 25, 30 years, I guess, that he had lived there. Maybe 30 years. He could not remember the girl's name, he told her, that had went missing. But this was the first time that Jody heard of this. So she had been having those weird dreams that we talked about and that I talked about in the beginning. In the dreams, she kept seeing a girl in a basement being tortured and her head was covered. Then she would dream about this couple talking to a girl walking along the street. Mm-hmm. She did not know what any of it meant, but at this point, she didn't care. She had had enough. They moved and things went back to normal. It wasn't until 2008 that says she was dating a guy at the time that he found a book written about two girls who disappeared in California. It was called The Perfect Victim. He's told her one of the girls they never found lived in your old apartment. I don't know how he figured that out so fast. I know that he put two and two together and this girl had lived in the apartment in Chico, California. So I guess there's not a lot of girls that lived in apartments in Chico, California that went missing in the 70s.
Probably not.
But so I think that's how he put it together. And he had also went to the library and found an old article about it. Jody decided that's when she's going to investigate what happened to the girl in apartment 14. What she uncovers is terrifying and unbelievable at the same time. A girl in 1976 had lived in the apartment, Marie Elizabeth Spanhake. On January 31st, 1976, Marie had disappeared while walking home from a flea market. She had a fight with her boyfriend. They were at the flea market together. So she decided to walk home by herself and left him there. Maria was only 19 years old and had only recently moved to California to live there in Chico with her boyfriend. Guess what name Maria went by? Marliz. Mm-hmm. That was her nickname, which goes back to the
My Liz,
which
imaginary for him.
Yes. The boyfriend was cleared and moved away. The case had gone cold. Jody and her boyfriend found an old article of Marliz when she went missing. She talked to her daughter about it, which I think her daughter was about 11 at this time. Mm-hmm. She showed the picture of Marliz that was in the article to her daughter. And she said, have you seen this girl before? And the girl, or does she look familiar? And she said, yes, that was the girl that used to be in our apartment. That's what, which is super creepy and strange. And so in the book, okay, we're going to talk about the case now. The book tells the story of two different cases. In November 7th, 1984, a lady, Janice Hooker, went to her church to confess these things her husband, Cameron Hooker, had done. She says she's scared of him and has tremendous guilt, and she just got to tell somebody who wants to get this off her chest.
I thought this part, it was just so bizarre.
The whole thing was bizarre.
Yeah, definitely.
This whole story is so bizarre.
Why?
It was so strange, and we'll talk about the wife a little bit, but do you know that I could not find, and I could be wrong, but I could not find one podcast on this case?
Yeah.
How strange is that? Mm-hmm. There was a YouTube, which I didn't watch it, but so weird. I mean, tons of articles that there was no podcast. I was like, that's just very strange. But because this is such a twisted, crazy case, and the paranormal aspect of it is just weird in itself.
And maybe that's why some people have shied away from it, just because it's so incredibly bizarre.
But those are my favorite ones.
Well, and I think that at first, but I've started following this lady on TikTok that takes peeks into the afterlife. Mm-hmm. She came up on my FYP.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I'm like, how can you peek into the afterlife? She's just repeating stuff about these people that she knows. But now I'm totally invested.
Oh, no. I mean, is she like a medium or something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally believe in mediums. For sure. I totally believe in ghosts, too. I mean, I don't want any in my house. And
unless they're coming to clean and we'll talk.
Yeah, if they want to pile up all the toys.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to clean, then we'll talk. But if they have evil intentions, I don't have time for it.
No, we do not want. All right, so the two cases. In November 7th, 1984, she says that this lady, Janice, she goes to her preacher or a church and says, this is what happened. And she wants to talk. So they call the police or investigator, and he comes in and talks to her. And she says that her husband had kidnapped a girl in 1976 and had killed her and buried her. They read her rights, like to arrest her, I guess. So she gets scared and says that she's no longer talking without a lawyer present. Which, I mean, I'm sure she was scared because mm-hmm. she was in on it. So they want to know more. They want to help find this girl and everything and know what she's talking about. So they strike a deal with her and give her immunity for her cooperation. So then Janice spills it all. Janice tells them the victim they kidnapped was Marliz. She explained that they saw her walking. They asked her if she wanted a ride. She says, yeah. He's, you know, this guy's with his wife. It seems like a safe situation, which, of course, back then in the 70s, everybody hitchhiked. Yes. Completely actually sounds very believable. You're mad at your boyfriend. You don't want to walk the whole way. So you see this nice couple and you get in the car with them, right? Janice's husband, he starts asking Marliz a lot of questions. Do you have family around, etc.? Which, of course, she didn't. She had moved away from her family. And he was thinking that this is exactly who we're looking for, a kidnap. I think that something Marliz figures out that they're like not taking her home. Something's not right. So she tries to get out of the car. And when she does, Cameron grabs her and holds a knife to her throat. Then this is so effed up. He puts a box over her head.
Yeah, they kept saying head box.
A head box.
And I had to ask, I'm like, have you ever heard of a head box? Because I haven't. I mean, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it.
But like, why would you go buy a head box? Like, why would you ever need one for anything other than
he built it? Because he was a sicko. Freak.
It's really strange.
I mean, and there's pictures of it in court and stuff. Like, it's, oh my gosh. I mean, I don't go into great detail in this story because it is disturbing. I have certain rules that there's things you can tell a story without mentioning every detail. Sometimes we don't need all the details. Okay, he puts her in the head box. It has like a lock on it. And apparently it muffles her screams, or that's what it's supposed to do.
And disorients.
Well, I think that it just sort of like, yeah, you can't see. It's kind of like when you're blindfolded and you're disoriented, but you also can't hear. And I know this because later they talked about it in the court. And it had, so it was a wooden box that he made, homemade, and it had some kind of like padding in it. Mm-hmm. And there was also breathing holes, but the whole thing seems just really bizarre and weird. So they drove to the couple's house about 40 miles away from Chico. They park in their garage. Cameron takes the head box off of her head and spray starting fluid in a rag and puts it over Marliz's mouth. So she'd be out of it and he can carry her inside the house, which he does, into the basement. And I mean, I think that his motive for all this, and they talk about it, is because his wife told on him. He wanted like a sex slave or some sicko crap like that. Someone to torture and do horrible things to.
From my understanding, he literally just woke up one morning and told his wife, I want to go cruising for a girl to kidnap and make a sex slave and torture victim out of. And the wife was like, cool, let's go.
Let's get in the car.
And then they went cruising.
Well, he had to make the head box first. I mean,
right. Then they went as a couple cruising for chicks to kidnap.
That made it a lot easier having the wife. I guess she was his. The whole thing is just so weird.
She was his literal ride or die.
Yeah. And I guess in the 70s, I mean, like I said, people hitchhiked. This kind of thing, they didn't really believe that something like this would happen. And ugh, what a sicko. Obviously he was like into this torture thing, but he didn't like them to scream. That was something that he did not like. So he read somewhere that you could cut someone's vocal cords to prevent. This was also just, ugh. Janice says that Cameron takes Marlis to the bathroom, cuts her vocal cords. Well, he sucks at it. Okay,
yeah,
he doesn't know
what he's
doing.
It was not a good job.
Yeah, he's not a doctor. He doesn't know what he's doing. There wasn't even YouTube or Google back then, mm-hmm. so I don't know what the hell he thought he was doing. And he cuts her throat a little bit too much, and she's bleeding bad, so he takes her back downstairs. And I don't know what all he did to her. It was something mm-hmm. about he hung her up or something. I don't even really want to get into it too much, but he does strangle her, and she dies, all right? They take Marlis to the trunk of their car, and they drive 30 minutes out to a remote area and bury her in a shallow grave. Then he burns her clothes and her belongings, and this all happens within a 12-hour span, which is crazy. Like,
what a date for a married couple.
Yeah, fail. He tried to get them a person to live there and with them, and he screwed the whole thing up and within 12 hours. But Janice, if she's not done telling all the six things that her husband has done. So about a year later, on May 19th, 1977, a year after Marlise was abducted and killed, there was another victim, Colleen Stan. She was 20 years old in Red Bluff, California. She goes missing. Colleen was hitchhiking through Two-Town to surprise a friend. So the couple picked her up, kidnapped her, put the head box on her, of course.
This head box.
Yeah, I know. It just sounds so weird and just, oh, it's so weird. I couldn't believe they had pictures of it. I was like in the courtroom. So he committed numerous crimes against Colleen, which you could only imagine, right?
I don't go into detail.
And this was real great what he did. What a freaking loser. He kept her under a waterbed for 20 hours a day. I don't really even understand all that, but.
Mm-mm.
So for 7 years, they keep this girl in their home. Okay, 7 years. It just doesn't even sound believable.
I know, I can't believe that she just.
Look, I have to say
still
it again.
Alive.
This whole story, you couldn't make any of this up. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to my thing that the truth is stranger than fiction. Like,
yeah, why hadn't I never heard of this?
I couldn't believe I'd never heard of this either. And it just completely blew my mind. Like when I texted you and I said, have you watched it? And you said, I'm shook. So I was like, we've got to talk about this story, especially mm-hmm. that I couldn't find any other podcast about it. I just thought, this is such a crazy story, even if the haunting stuff's not true at all, this is a crazy story.
All things aside from haunting, we have the murder of Marlis and then the kidnap and torture for 7 years of Colleen. And then this wife definitely has issues. And this man is,
could you imagine?
Obviously psychotic.
Oh my gosh. So, and then 7 years later, 7 years has gone by that they've all been living like this. In 1984, Janice goes to Colleen and tells her that she's going to leave Cameron. She's had enough. Imagine that, right?
Yeah. I mean,
I finally had enough. Finally had enough of this horrible, horrible monster. So she was 16 when she had married Cameron. And I'm not sure, it may have said how old he was, but he was much older, of course. And I mean, that's young, but that's probably in 1970 something. That's probably,
I mean, it was probably average back then.
It probably was. I guess she had grown up and realized that if she couldn't take it anymore,
it's not good to kidnap people.
Yeah, and murder them. So Janice and Colleen, thank God, Janice takes Colleen with her. They leave together the next day after Cameron goes to work.
This is like the one redeeming thing, Janice.
Yes, it is. So they both went to Janice's house. And no, her parents' house, which I thought was strange. But I think that Colleen probably had that whole, like, a little bit just messed up in the head. And
well, God.
Well, and Janice was scared she was going to get in trouble. Colleen goes with her to her parents' house. But then I think maybe a while later, Colleen goes home. She tells her family about it, but she doesn't talk too much about it. I think they're scared. I mean, at this point, Cameron is still out.
On the loose.
Yeah, he's still on the loose. So I think that. And then also, Janice is scared she's going to get in trouble. So she finally can't take it anymore. About 3 months later, I think it was 3 months later. Yes, she goes and tells her preacher, and then all that happens and it all unfolds. They called Colleen, and her story and Janice's story completely matched up. They believed the story and everything like that. So then, of course, they did ask Colleen, do you know anything about Marlis? And that Colleen says that Cameron just had a picture of the girl, which they realize was Marlis. That definitely links him to her, is what I would think. The picture, right? I guess they could say it was a news clipping, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they needed to find Marlis's body to have a stronger case against Cameron.
Right.
So the police took Janice out several times to find her body, which they never could. So they decided, this was so crazy and ridiculous, that there was not enough evidence, no body, no crime, right? There was not enough evidence to charge Cameron for Marliz's murder. So they focused on the abduction and the torture of Colleen. They interviewed Colleen on Unsolved Mysteries, which was crazy because I was just like so glad she was alive.
I hope that she sees a counselor every day. Gosh.
Or Janice, too. I mean, not that I... Now, and I will, I should go back and say this, not that I think Janice was okay to be a participant or even be married to this guy, or could you even imagine, but when he was doing the stuff with Marliz's vocal cords, she wouldn't help him. She said she refused to help him, and he was like, I'll kill you too if you don't help me, and so she was just like helping him, whatever. Anyway, the whole thing is crazy.
It's just so strange that they didn't have enough circumstantial evidence, even with Janice's eyewitness account. I mean, I know with no body, it's more difficult.
I think it's different now, though. I do not think.
Maybe then.
Yeah, I do. I think then it was just easier to get away with murder. I mean, I do. There wasn't DNA. There wasn't forensics. Even if now, though, even if you don't find a body in all, like you said, the circumstantial.
Yeah, they can still... Evidence. I think if it happened today, it would be different.
I think it is different. And
so
I think
that committed a crime back then, that was their window of opportunity.
They needed the body, which is just ridiculous because of all the things. Like, the fact that everything was so simple, was she not credible enough? I mean, I don't understand it at all, which is just ridiculous.
It's just like Marliz was his botched first attempt.
Well, she was.
So then Colleen was like his second one that he was going to do a better job.
That's exactly what happened. So... Of course, they wanted to get this guy, so they focus on the abduction of Colleen, and they said that when Colleen got interviewed, she had told, said that Cameron even told Colleen that she would cut her vocal cords if she screamed because he had done it before. Yeah. I'm like, and she's a victim, too, so it's not, I just definitely think they should have tried him for Marliz's murder, and I think it's crazy that they didn't, but I do think things were different then, but why couldn't they just do it now? Because they still can, because guess what? Cameron's still... Of course, all the details came out. It was national news, which I guess this is in 84, so were you even born yet? I don't think...
I was born in 84.
Okay.
So December of 84. Well, I guess that's why I missed it.
Yes, you did. And for 7 years, you know, that this girl, and she was alive, thank goodness. But so, of course, the judge gives... He gets found guilty of the abduction and torture of Colleen, and the judge gives him the maximum sentence that he can. He was sentenced to 104 years, but still, you know, Marliz's case is still open.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go back to Jodie Foster. So she said a year after they moved out of the apartment, she would have dreams again. Okay, so I assume these dreams went on and off for years, right? Mm-hmm. She always heard this number.
Mm-hmm.
That was where the number...
Yeah, that's where I got it from.
And she was, like, floating, she said, like, over this woods, and she would hear this number, she would hear this number. She did not know what it was at all, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure, like, a year after it happened, still having the dream, she doesn't know what it is. I don't think she has a clue about anything until 2008 when her then-boyfriend finds the book, and they realize, and they start looking more in... I don't think they even knew her name. She said she didn't even want to investigate it. She's having the dreams, but she didn't want to investigate at that time. She was still PTSD, freaked out from everything that happened.
Yeah, let's just forget.
A long time goes by. She's still having these dreams, and she knew that Marliz had never been found. She heard the number, so she thought, okay, maybe now she's thinking maybe she's trying to give me a location. Because she knew that this case was still open. It had not been solved. They had not found her. And so she wrote the numbers down, maybe when she first started having the dream. I don't know. She kept it for a while. And then when everything, can of worms gets opened back up, she thinks, you know, maybe I just need to call the police and just tell them that I have this information. It may be weird. It's from my dream. And they may think I'm absolutely crazy. But she said, I just had this thing where I had to give them this information. Maybe this will help investigators. So she called the Red Bluff Police Department and talks to investigator Kevin Hale. She tells him she lived in Marliz's old apartment and she might have some information relating to the case. She said she thought he hung up on her because she said there was just like total silence on the other end of the phone. Then all of a sudden he goes, why are you calling me now? He said that they were actually in the middle of opening a cold case on Marie Elizabeth Stanhake. The investigator said he's never been so freaked out before. Like, he had just opened the folder and was, like, getting into it. And then he gets this random call, like, how many years later?
Yeah.
From Jodie Foster. Jodie told him everything she knew. And he could not tell her anything or make any comments about it since it was still an open investigation. Only she could tell him things.
Mm-hmm.
So, He goes back because they just reopened, you know, re-looking into the case. So he talks to Janice again with these numbers and coordinates that they think are coordinates and that they got from Jody, and they seem to match up. And so they've narrowed it down where they think that Marliz is buried. Of course, they still go looking for her, and they've never found her to this day, which is very sad.
Yeah, it's sad.
It is, really. And at the end of the episode, the investigators met with Jodie Foster, like, for the Unsolved Mysteries episode, and they told her that she never even knew this, like, all these years, right? And they told her that in 2008, that her the numbers that she gave them, the coordinates, that they matched up to Janice's. And she, I don't even think she knew anything about Janice. That's the only thing that kind of made me believe the Jodie Foster story. It was odd that she called the investigator right when he was reopening the case. Like, she just, maybe her dreams started back up. I don't know. And then that she didn't know all these things about Janice because she's kind of like a informant. They're not going to tell the public everything she's telling.
I hope Janice isn't sharing her story with lots of people.
No, Janice actually would not be interviewed, would not participate in the Unsolved Mysteries thing because she's changed her name. And
good.
She's like a totally different person. But yeah, I don't blame her. But they obviously still had her contact information in 2008. And she tried to help them again.
Probably a witness protection.
Yeah, they said she was scared, but they were like reminded her that she could not be charged with any crime. And then she was like, okay. Because she probably had a new life at this point, you know. Yeah. But she did try to help them. It's been 46 years since Marliz disappeared. Cameron is an old man now, but he has been granted parole.
What?
Yep. I mean, that is
so... I missed that part.
Yes.
I think I was just trying to process.
I know. Everything. He was released to a mental health hospital, though. It's like a jail hospital type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he could, if they see that he's fit... He could be released into the public.
No, he doesn't need to.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, could you imagine that he would even get out at all? That's another thing that I think things have changed. But I guess they couldn't charge him with the murder. I don't know what 12 jurors, I don't know who would say that he wasn't guilty of murdering Marliz.
I don't think anybody.
And the sad thing is, she wanted her case to be solved. Obviously, in 2008, if she's a still super pissed ghost, she wants... somebody to find her, and she wants him to be charged with it. Why can't they go back and charge him with it now?
Well, there's no statute of limitations for murder. So, I mean, they could.
Why wouldn't they?
I think it's so strange that from all of that, they weren't able to recover her remains. I mean, are they completely disintegrated?
They said that it is, like, so, like, vast and rural, and it's, like, a real, I guess, outskirts California, just wilderness-type area. And I mean, honestly,
if it's like desert or I'm not sure of the.
It looked like a lot of trees, but like wilderness.
Yeah, or it could be the Northern California.
That's what I'm
thinking,
the Northern, yeah.
Shift my topography and we're going to be in more like trees.
That's what it looked like, at least on.
Maybe a wild animal or something.
Well, they said it was a shallow grave.
Yeah.
And that's probably exactly what happened. You're exactly right. I mean, because at that time, 76 to 84. Mm-hmm. By the time they go looking for it, it's been 8 years.
Yeah.
A lot can happen from a shallow grave in 8 years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot can happen in a couple of days.
So maybe she doesn't... Well, I think she thinks if she's found that Liam would be totally making fun of me saying this, acting like her ghost is talking. Mm-hmm. But maybe if she's not able to be found, but I don't know if she doesn't know that, or if she thinks that she's found... that they could maybe link. I feel like she would want Cameron to be charged with her murder. That's what I feel like is more important.
Yeah, because if somebody does that to me, I am haunting you.
Yeah, everybody, until you get it found out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, things are going to be bad.
I mean, she's super pissed, and I just think it's super, I don't care how old the case is. They charge people with murders all the time 46 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they... I don't know. Why don't they just did an Unsolved Mysteries whole episode about it? I don't know why they can't. It's kind of like when Netflix gets stuff dredged back up, like that Making a Murderer and all that kind of stuff.
That kind of started my
true crime.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah. But then it just really freaked me out, though, at a certain point, because I was thinking, this could happen to anyone.
Yeah, well, he has to be a bad person. I mean, he killed animals and stuff.
Right? Well, yeah.
He tortured animals. Any animal, I mean, they do say that's a sign of sociopathic,
really
murderous tendencies.
Of a person, if they were innocent.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
It would, just thinking on that side of the coin, how scary it is, because, I mean, anyone can say anything.
But they can. But when you've got a history of violence and a history of
Yeah, absolutely.
Things, I feel like you're likely, more likely that you did it.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing. But no, I completely agree. That
I'm so bad about just playing devil's advocate, though.
No, I'm very bad about it, too. I mean, I feel like even with parenting or my kids and they're complaining about somebody, I'm like, well, what did you do to them? I mean, you got to do that.
No, always.
But sometimes history, you got to look at the past to figure out the future. So, in a way, but of course, I don't know anything. I'm just a sleuth. But,
okay. A blonde sleuth.
A blonde sleuth, my bad. And so are you.
Mm-hmm.
So is Leah. But I think that we need to, I think they need to bring, they need to charge this dude, especially if they think it's going to get out.
I feel like there's enough.
I know. Why are they so worried about it? I mean, I understand back then being worried about it, but not
now. Old Man River doesn't need to get out of the mental hospital. He needs to stay somewhere.
He's not that old. He'd do something. What a sicko.
Yeah. You know? He was terrible.
Yes. And that was, what was his name? Just so we know that. Yeah, Cameron.
Cameron.
I think their last name's Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He needs to stay behind bars.
Yeah. For sure.
And I guess that's just what they thought. Oh, he's behind bars for 104 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how
it works. But it's not good when you have a chance at parole.
I guess half of the sentence. If he's almost served half the sentence, if it was, well, it was probably, when once he was sentenced, it was closer to 40 years.
But what a shame.
It's not enough.
Meanwhile, Marliz is really, haunting everyone.
Is really pissed because she wants him to get charged for it, so they need to answer her wishes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get with it.
But anyways, well, thank you for listening this week to this crazy, crazy case.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a Mystery Monday case.
And yes.
A true crime case.
I very much recommend doing your own research on this case and watching. We are not paid by Netflix, but watch the Unsolved Mysteries episode, Apartment 14.
It's called, The Haunting at Apartment 14. Mm-hmm. You have to watch it. It will blow your mind. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
And please like us on Instagram, Facebook, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
Share with your friends.
And I'm definitely going to share the story of Marliz because this needs to be out there.
And then she won't haunt us.
I know.
I'll tell you that much.
Well, I mean, yeah.
We're safe from haunting.
Safe from haunting from Marliz.
We're trying to put it out there.
Yes.
For her so it can get solved.